Yeah, I mean, there's certain tried and true rules, or at least theories on when to keep moving forward. But yeah, trying to buy a 10, 20, 30, $40 million apartment complex based on three numbers is probably a problem. I mean, most gurus try to give it to you as basic as possible for you to buy their program and to invest in their amazingness. So.
And that's where I come in as a consultant and a coach, is most of my clients have already been involved in mentorship programs, and their underwriting was probably a little more advanced than the Grant Cardone, but they didn't get what they needed from their program, and so they wanted to seek further knowledge. And yeah, those three numbers are good, but getting three numbers is the hard. Welcome to the Ironclad Underwriting Podcast, where precision meets performance in commercial real estate. I'm your host, Jason Williams, and every week we deep dive into the strategies and systems and stories behind rock solid underwriting. Whether you're a seasoned analyst, an up-and-coming investor, or a commercial real estate professional looking to sharpen your edge, this show is your front row seat to expert insights, emerging trends, and real-world underwriting tactics that stand the test of time and scrutiny. From market assumptions to debt structuring, cap rates to cash flow, we're cutting through the noise and getting to the numbers that matter. So sharpen your pencils and fire up those models. Let's get to work. This is Ironclad Underwriting. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Ironclad Underwriting Podcast. As always, I got my co-host here, Frank Padlano. How are you doing, Frank?
Good sir, good sir. Fresh haircut, waiting to see you next week. Just getting everything lined up.
Cool. Going to see, was it Cody Sanchez or something like that?
Yeah, business buying conference. Always looking at I wouldn't say I'm always looking at everything, but always trying to continue to educate myself on different possibilities.
Yeah, and this isn't the topic I wanted to get into, but I've been focusing more on just my single business instead of trying to like spread out. That way I can like, it's like you put all your eggs in one basket and you guard that basket with everything you have type thing is my approach right now. Once I get it going, then I'll be able to expand, but that's where I am currently.
Well, I mean, we have a lot of people that need help with focus as well. But
And that's one thing entrepreneurs have is shiny object syndrome. It's like, oh, look, that looks pretty cool. I can do that. Ooh, that will make me 10 times as much money as what I'm doing right now. And then they end up like going 20 different directions and not focusing and floundering and everything. So,
the grass is not always greener.
nope.
So what are we talking about today?
So what I wanted to talk about today was I've been seeing a lot of Grant Cardone on YouTube lately. He's training his, I guess, 12-year-old daughter on how to buy an apartment complex or how to underwrite one. And so he sits her down, gives her a pad of paper, and says, "All right, this is all you need to know to underwrite a multifamily commercial real estate deal. You get your gross revenue, you get your expenses, you subtract your expenses from your gross revenue, and that's your NOI. And then you figure out what cap rate you want to buy it at. And then that's what that sell. Then that your price. If you're
Wow, that
talking to
sounds
a,
super easy.
if you talk to a bank, you can ask them what cap rate they're underwriting it to, and then you underwrite it to that. And then that again, that's your price. And bam, wham, bam. Thank you, ma'am."
So what does he call this just how to
He's a,
underwrite on the back of a napkin, or what does he call it?
no, how to buy multifamily deals.
The 60-second approach.
Something like that. It's like it's super easy. I'll even teach my daughter how to do it on our plane ride down to looking at a property. And so it's like, okay, that is good for like an initial setup. And even I have a 2-minute calculator that does all of that for you on my website, ironcladunderwriting.com/2-minute. And so you can punch in the numbers, but I would not be buying a property with that number. I would use that number to move forward to see if it's even worth pursuing or not, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain tried and true rules, or at least theories on when to keep moving forward. This automatically makes me think of like single families with like the 1% rule. But yeah, trying to buy a 10, 20, 30, $40 million apartment complex based on three numbers is probably a problem.
Yeah. And for those that don't know what the 1% rule is with residential, is if you can get 1% of your purchase price as monthly rent, then that is a starting point that the deal is potentially good. Not saying it is good, but it's worth looking and investigating further. If it doesn't meet the
Absolutely.
1% rule, then it's probably better to move on to something else. But granted, it all depends on your market too,
Oh, absolutely.
because
There's no 1% rule in Rhode Island right now on single family homes. You're going to get $2,000, $3,000 a month, and the home's going to be 400,000, so.
that's like half a percent rule. But would that cover all of the taxes and insurance
I
and
don't know many people that are
mortgage?
buying new single families doing it the traditional way. I mean, there's ways around it. I know people that are doing co-living instead. So it's rent by the bedroom. Maybe they'll be able to get $1,000 per bedroom a month. So then, if it's a $400,000 house, if it's a four bedroom, maybe they can get 4,000. So.
So there's ways to get to that 1%, but really that 1% you need, if especially if you have a mortgage, you need it to be able to pay the taxes and insurance and your bank note. And that's just basically breaking even. Someone else is paying your mortgage for you. You're not going to be cash flowing that probably, but that again is not the topic of today's podcast. So buying a $5 million, $50 million deal with three numbers sounds like it's a win, right? That's all you need.
I mean, most gurus try to give it to you as basic as possible for you to buy their program and to invest in their amazingness. So.
And that's where I come in as a consultant and a coach. Is most of my clients have already been involved in mentorship programs, and their underwriting was probably a little more advanced than the Grant Cardone, but they didn't get what they needed from their program, and so they wanted to seek further knowledge. And yeah, those three numbers are good, but getting three numbers is the hard part. When you're buying a property and you're looking at those three numbers, that is what the existing owner has been able to do. When you take ownership, you need to be able to figure out how to get those three numbers and make them as favorable for you as you can. And that's where your business plan comes in. That's where you go into all the details so that you can like isolate payroll, taxes, insurance, repairs and maintenance, turnover costs, all of that stuff. You can start going into deep diving so that you can reduce your expenses, increase your revenue, increase your NOI, and then that gives you the best bang for your buck, I guess. But yeah, suppose, and this is just a hypothetical, you're buying a property and all the numbers work out and you get a valuation using Grant Cardone's method, but you don't go into like the leases, you don't see when they're all due up, and then you realize, hey, all these leases end like right after we close, a month after we close. And for whatever reason, maybe a factory in the town shuts down and everybody moves out. All of a sudden, you just bought yourself a pretty expensive, I guess, shell, because nothing's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I worry about that a little off topic. I worry about that a lot with commercial multifamily, like retail spaces, especially if someone's owned something for a long time and they're selling and the number seems like it works at the beginning. And it's like, oh, that's because CVS is probably moving, but they're not telling you that. And they already know because they have the inside information because they're the ones selling it, you know.
Well, I mean, theoretically, when you're going through your due diligence, you should have all the leases and you'd be able to
Oh,
see
definitely.
when the leases expire.
Yeah. But just overall, that's one of the things that I was worrying about when you said, because most of the time, I mean, sellers usually know what the property's worth. Sometimes they're asking more than what they think it's worth, than than what it's actually worth to you. But like I'm saying, if there's something like we're looking at a recent deal here, it was 25 units or something. It's like, whoa, there's something wrong. Those numbers work at the price they're trying to sell it at. And come to find out, it was kind of in a war zone in some ways. You
Yeah.
know, bad neighborhood. I think the property police report rating was an F, stuff like that. It's like, yeah, no wonder why the numbers work, you know?
Well, per Grant Cardone's methodology, that war zone would just have a higher cap rate and you could still buy a good property then.
Yeah.
I know we've discussed this in previous episodes where you say your mentor or one of your mentors say you should always put in an offer on every single thing. But if it's in a war zone, do you want to put in the offer? What if it's accepted? Then all of a sudden you have a war zone headache that requires 99% of your attention. I don't think I would want to even put in an
If you're
offer on
buying it
that.
at a 20 cap, then it's worth it.
Not necessarily.
I
I
know, I'm
mean,
playing with you, that you could hire someone extra, even if it's a retired police officer, to be the assistant manager for that building. But yeah,
yeah.
just playing with you since we're talking about it.
So, but yeah, there's more to underwriting than this. And if this is like the first episode you've heard of me, you can go through some of my previous episodes where we go through like all the expenses, all the income items, and everything you need to make good underwriting decisions and moving forward. So, but those three numbers, I wouldn't put too much stock in. And I guarantee Grant Cardone is not buying properties with just those three numbers.
Oh no, definitely not. That's just a come on to get you to buy the program or something. I mean, if you think of like the first number you said was revenue. So I mean, yeah, they're giving you a raw revenue number, but you really have to deep dive all those different aspects. I mean, how much of that is coming from laundry? How much is coming from just return of expenses such as rubs, you know, ratio utility billing.
Yeah.
How far under market or how far overpriced are those tenants? You know, you could be technically full, but if a third of the people aren't paying, then are you really full or your economic occupancy is terrible?
And economic occupancy versus physical occupancy. Physical occupancy is all right. I have 100 units, 10 of them are empty. I have 10% physical vacancy or 90% physical occupancy. But now, of those remaining, you have 40 people who aren't paying anything, but they're living there. So then that means your economic vacancy is 50% because half the people, or if it was full, half of them aren't paying you. But physically, 90% are there. So that's the difference in economic and physical occupancy. And I mean, there's more to it than that, but that's just a good general overview of the difference. So.
Yeah, we had a deal last year. It was a big deal. It was 400 units, and the economic occupancy, no, sorry, the physical occupancy, it was like there was 100 units down, so it was over 25% vacant. And then when we thought about economic occupancy, I mean, we were in the 50s. So yeah, you got to take that into consideration. So that's the first number you talked about. Second number, obviously, we're talking about expenses.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you're just getting a raw one expense number, you and I both know that it's convenient the number of sellers that mistakenly forget to include certain items in expenses. You know, oh, the taxes. Yeah, I paid that, but that was paid in December, so it's not on this year's pro forma or stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, or properties or property management. You know.
So, and another thing with the Grant Cardone method is he's like, all right, if you buy a property in West Florida, you're looking at 40% expense ratio. So if you have $1 million gross revenue, 400,000 of it is expenses. But if you look at the East Coast, you're looking at 50%. So 500,000 is expenses. That's as deep as he gets into it. He doesn't go into it any further. He said Houston, or yeah, Houston is 50%, Austin is 50%, and quite frankly, lately, from everything I've seen, you're lucky if you hit 50%. I've seen them go up to 60%, and in a few cases, 70%. Granted, those 70% are few and far between, but it does happen, and I have personally seen it myself. So.
Wow, if you're at 70%, you might as well just start underwriting hotels, right? 75% for hotels or 80%. But no, and I agree, by the way, one of my closest partners often underwrites at a 60% expense ratio if utilities are included. But back to the expenses, I mean, you and I both know that one of the games people play is repairs and maintenance versus CapEx. I had a friend, a business partner who was trying to sell a property. It's like, buddy, these repairs and maintenance numbers are just too low. This is a Class C property. The property is over 50 years old. You can't be putting $100 a door for repairs and maintenance per month. You know, 175 you hear a lot. That's minimum. 275 might be more standard. It's different, but what he was doing, he was dumping so much into CapEx to make the NOI look better.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do with that. Some of it is shady, some of it is gray area, some of it is just flat wrong. But what you see a lot of times and with management is like, all right, what can go above and below the line? And the line being your NOI. So if it's above the line, it counts toward the total expenses and goes counts against your NOI. If it's below the line, it doesn't matter. And so though they might say, all right, well, we had to replace this dishwasher, so that's going below the line. But if you're hiring a repairman to come out and fix a dishwasher, that could be above the line. And so when you start getting into some of that, it's like, well, we don't repair dishwashers all the time, so we'll just go ahead and make that a CapEx thing and we'll put it below the line. Now, all of a sudden, your expenses go down, your NOI goes up, and they just increase the value of that property by whatever, $50,000, $100,000 by putting that item below the line. You do that over and over and over again, then you can really increase the value of the property on paper, but it doesn't really mean anything in real terms. So yeah, you have to go in and make sure your numbers are aligned with the market, the vintage of the property. And if something looks out of place, or something looks questionable, it probably is. I don't think I've ever seen anything that looked questionable but actually came out to be true. Have you ever seen anything like that? Maybe
Give me an example.
an insurance quote at like 150, 175 a door or something like that on a property in Idaho or something up there where it's like super cheap. It looks like
Yeah,
super cheap.
more like 250 a door. I think the last time I looked at one in Idaho, I made them put it at 400 a door no matter what anyway.
Yeah, that's what I would have done. But it's like, I don't, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is, and it needs more investigation. So.
Well, especially in the insurance, what I even told them, I said, hey, listen, if we have a 20% increase in insurance next year, we have it figured in. You know, it's already banked in. So, yeah, the main thing to realize is that if you're dealing at a six cap, if you have a $5,000 difference because they put the air conditioning system or the heating system, if they put it as a CapEx, which it should be a CapEx, but if they put it as a CapEx, that's an $83,000 difference in value just for one heating system. You
Yeah,
know,
for
so
five
those kind of
thousand
things.
dollars, yeah, at a six cap. And for those wondering how he calculated it, he took 5,000 and divided it by 0.06. That's 83,333.
So those things add up pretty quickly, especially depending on how people are putting repairs and maintenance versus CapEx. If you're doing all new flooring in 32 apartments and you're getting a good deal at $2,000 an apartment, that's $64,000. That could easily be a $500,000 difference in value if they put it in as repair and maintenance versus CapEx.
Yeah. Now, if you're going in with that many floors, I would hope you had put that into your CapEx budget and either raise enough money for it or have enough money for it in reserves or a loan and be able to handle it that way, versus trying to do it via cash flow. And that's a good way to actually gauge if it's operating expense or capital expense is, are you paying for it with extra money or are you paying for it with the cash flow? If you're paying for it with the cash flow, it's probably more than likely an operating expense. What would you say to that?
I mean, that's definitely a good way to put it. Sometimes if you have a lot of people try to run these deals with no CapEx budget, so it can be a problem.
So everything's being paid for by cash flow.
Yeah, or you're borrowing more money on a credit card, 0% interest or something like that, or not, 30% interest.
So that's on the expenses side. We haven't even touched really the revenue side.
I mean, I briefly mentioned it, just the concept of is there rubs going on?
But I'm
And
thinking more of just like the rents in general. Are you able to increase rents? How much are you able to increase them by? Or are you in a declining market where you actually have to lower your rents just to make it by? And then, because if you lower your rents are the majority of the income of the property.
yes.
If you decrease that, you're decreasing your gross revenue significantly. And then that drastically decreases your NOI. So, and that's sort of what I alluded to earlier is like, what if everybody moves out a month after you buy it? How are you gonna survive? How are you gonna make money this deal? Because you need the rents to make the deal happen. And that's where your market analysis comes in. That's where having boots on the ground comes in so that you know if if your residents can handle an increase in rent, or do you have to add additional amenities so that they can justify an increase in rent, or is everybody leaving and you have to offer concessions and lower rent? So
Yeah, there's been a few markets that I'm involved in where the vacancy rate has increased. You know, market vacancy was originally like 92. The property manager's budgeting 95% occupied, and the market has dropped to 89. And usually we're dealing with some older buildings, you know, borderline B or C class properties. So they're probably you know, there are people that are going to look around a little bit if the rents are too high.
And another number that Grant Cardone doesn't even mention would be a break-even occupancy. It's like, how much vacancy can you sustain before you're coming out of pocket to pay all your operating expenses, your mortgage payment, and all of that? Is it 83%? Is it 93%? Is it somewhere in between? Is it 60%? Who knows what it is? You need to be able to calculate it so that you can really know the strength of the investment you're getting into. And if you're sitting at 93 break even occupancy, there is zero room for error. You have to have 93% or higher occupancy just to make the numbers work. Otherwise, you're coming out of pocket. So
Been there on some deals.
Grant Cardone's method works for like back the napkin, quick numbers to see if it's worth pursuing. But then once you determine if it's worth pursuing or not, that's when the real underwriting comes in. And that's where you need more guidance. If you don't have it, you have to go into the weeds. And if you need assistance with that, you can look me up. Frank is also a good resource as well. We've helped quite a few people just on a Zoom call like this, where it's like, all right, they brought us a deal and you and I were we like tore it apart and say, all right, you're not going to get these numbers the way you think you are. And if you need that sort of help, look me up, ironcladunderwriting.com. Anything else on your
No, it
end?
is pretty good.
All right. We'll catch you later. Bye.